My name is Victoria Matei.
My name is Olga Araceli.
And we are both undocumented women of color. Welcome back, Olga. I missed you the last recording.
Oh, I've missed you too.
I just got back from Orlando and Olga picked me up from the airport and we're like, let's take advantage of this day to get together and record. Yeah. So we hope that you enjoy today's episode. So before we get started, we should probably check in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with you, Olga.
Okay. So there's not much, just been kind of working and also really organizing or helping to organize. The Purépecha New Year that's coming up in February. I'm really excited about that. And it's been like a weekly thing of getting together with the group and just figuring out what we need and how to set up the space and everything. We're expecting like a bigger crowd and some folks from like California and things like that. So we're really excited to see different communities like come together. We're really kind of nervous also just because it's going to be bigger. And so our team is a little smaller than the past years just because of different circumstances with the team members. Most of them are like out. There's a thing like two or three of the women from the group who had children. And I mean, that's also something really like great because then we'll have more babies to add and more people to join our team. So we're excited. But that also just means that they'll have to spend time away, you know, taking care of themselves. And then this week I realized that I really, 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 I can't stress that enough, need to quit my job. I think that I'm really done with that environment. I kind of just took it because I needed money, like any broke graduate college student does, you know. But I think I'm finally done. I took the last straw, so yeah, hopefully I have the courage. And I think you said you were gonna help me, so
yeah, I'm gonna help you.
I've never quit a job, so this is new
learning curve.
Yeah,
I've never quit one either, but I'm gonna help you get to the I'm gonna help you get to the root of the problem.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. Let's see.
So for my check-in, I will share that I flew across the country yesterday, which was rough. I think I was traveling for like 12 hours, maybe longer. I don't know. It was terrible. I hate being in an airplane. But I was lucky enough to go to Orlando for the Dream Lead Institute retreat. And this time we went to the happiest place on earth. Mm-hmm. and I had a lot of like, I don't know. It was like super awesome because I never in my life thought that I'd have the opportunity to go to Disney World. And we didn't like go and enjoy the theme parks or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we went, we were able to look at like Disney Springs and like we had the opportunity to present to a group that was there. One of the things that like I thought, you know, that I've been reflecting on is how manipulating and influencing Disney is. And one of the things that pops to mind is like, when we asked this woman that we presented to, like, if we could take a shuttle to Disney Springs, her answer was so, like, rehearsed and, like, her tone of voice changed, like, everything changed.
Wow.
And, like, I noticed it in other people, too. And I was like, this is a cult. So, it was really interesting and, like, trying to process how Disney has a lot of power and influence, especially mm-hmm. in, like, children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people, not just people, but like large corporations and businesses really target children, right? Like their biggest like marketing strategy is like usually catered to children because children then get their parents to buy them all these things.
Yeah.
And so that's just like something I've been reflecting on. And one of the other weird things that I want to share that I reflected on was the smell of Disney, because I like remember like walking outside and being just like slapped in the face with this smell. And this smell, like, it just weirded me out because I instantly felt happy. And I think I'm connecting it. And it smelled the same as, like, any Disney store you walk into.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, at, you know, the Bellevue Mall used to have a Disney store. I'm sure it still does. But, like, it had that same smell. So it kind of took me back to that feeling.
Hmm.
And it, like, made me feel really happy. And it just, like, again, it, like, hit me, like, really hard all at once. And mm-hmm. I was just thinking about how, like, smells are also really manipulating. And I don't know. There's just so much to reflect on just based off that Disney experience. Yeah, but there was a lot of really other cool things that happened. I think, you know, the word that I used for explaining this retreat in specific was challenging, because mm-hmm. there was a lot of challenging each other and challenging yourself. And challenging yourself to, like, take critical feedback was also, like, it's difficult, right? But I want to learn to kind of take that in more. Mm. So that is part of my check-in. The last thing I'll say is it's Aquarius season. My birthday's soon. And I don't know how many days. I don't, 7 days a week. Ooh. I'm going to be 26 years old. I am officially in my, like,
late 20s.
Ah! Wow. I know. Well, anyway, so the topic for today is
elitism.
So we're going to quickly just cover the definition of elitism and kind of go into, like, the cause and effects. You know, there are so many things that we could have talked about within that. Mm-hmm.
We were really having a hard time, like, choosing, or when we, like, found one and then it would link to us to, like, another topic, and then we would just go on and on and on, and until we were like, no, okay, we gotta stop.
Yeah, we gotta, like, pick a couple and just, like, mm-hmm. build off of those a little bit, because there's so many and they're so complex, and you're not gonna learn all about them in the 3 hours we spent researching. Yeah. Because that's how long, you know, this took us. And I think another one is that I'm just, like, really, like, scatterbrained. So Olga tries to help keep me on track.
Okay. So elitism, right?
Yes.
We have a hard time
saying that. Elitism.
Yeah. Elitism.
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 Oh, whatever. Okay. You get it.
So we just Googled it, and it says the advocacy or existence of an elite as a dominating element in a system or society.
The kind of way that we interpreted that was, like, people having essentially, like, power and influence and access to resources, and also, like, being able to control certain things in society. And we ended up narrowing it down to about 5 different topics, and they're not all, like, your typical topics on elitism, but just to kind of name a few that, like, again, like Olga mentioned, like, we would write one and then we'd build off of it and be like, what about this? What about that? So it's kind of like a really, really long list. So I'll read a couple and then I'll have Olga read a couple. And so obviously, class, race, able-bodied elitism, gender elitism, citizenship elitism.
We also came up with, like, occupational, educational, like, sexual orientation, and then social, like, media platforms, and geographical elitism.
And also, like, religion and body type elitism. Like, it just went on and on, right? And mm-hmm. so we were trying to narrow it down. And before we tell you which ones we chose, we want to say that, you know, elitism overall is kind of like a huge, again, it's power, it's control. There's systemic benefits to it. There's additional resources that you get because of this elite title. Mm-hmm. And also you have a lot of influence. Something that we got at the fellowship this weekend was the 100 most influential people mm-hmm. In 2018. And it was like, it was just really eye opening. So I think, you know, when we think about elitism and power and all these other forms of what it is that elitism is, mm-hmm. We need to understand that, like, the root of it, again, is, like, that control, power, and money mm-hmm. and those systemic benefits. Another thing that we came across that really stood out to me was, like, it attributes power to those best to wield it. So they come with the authority to, like, govern society.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more in depth about those within all of them. So do you want to share which 4 we chose? Actually, 5.
The different forms of elitism that we're going to cover are liberal, people of color, higher education, citizenship, and social platform.
So we're going to start with liberal elitism. And I think this one is one that is constantly dismissed. And it's kind of funny because when we kind of share about like why it's dismissed, it kind of makes sense. And one of them is that you only hear what you want to hear, right? You only pay attention to the things that you want to pay attention to. Liberals are typically the people that use those buzzwords like diversity, mm-hmm. inclusion, I'm an ally, I donate to this nonprofit, so like mm-hmm. I'm deserving of an opinion of it or a voice in it. Do you kind of want to talk a little bit more about kind of like the compromising and middle way stuff? Because I think that is really kind of relevant to everything that's happening in politics.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially the compromising where they said, I was like, okay, they're gonna do this, but in return we're gonna, you know, get this. And a lot of compromising that can be so damaging to our communities, especially if they're not a part of like whatever the deal or bill or law, right, is gonna be put in place. And some of us can't really even like afford that compromising. So I think
exactly.
Liberal, even though they're like, okay, well, like we're going to help out the community in this way, but then who are we really like throwing under the bus? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And I think we're critiquing liberalism because you constantly hear it. Like people think because they're progressive mm-hmm. that they're right. You know, again, they hear what they want to hear. They contribute to what they want to contribute to. They show up to what they want mm-hmm. to be a part of. And in turn, for a say and a voice mm-hmm. in that social movement.
Yeah.
Another thing that we started reflecting on was like, why is education such an important part to this? Because it establishes credibility. Liberals love college students. They love like people of color that were able to navigate higher education. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they were able to navigate higher education. They see it as this kind of like rite of passage of like building yeah. credibility that they deserve it because they made it through this system mm-hmm. that constantly pushed them down.
Yeah. And then they like give them that like validity, right? Like, okay, now because you've made it and you have like this degree or this certain type of education behind you, now you can... Welcome to the club, or...
Exactly. Welcome to the club. Here's your safety pin. So that's another thing was like we were talking about that whole safety pin movement, right? And because a liberal decided they were going to wear a safety pin, that now makes them the woke mm-hmm. person that they feel so deserving to be, mm-hmm. which detracts from the conversation overall in general. Yeah. Like, there's always, like, liberals being like, oh, like, let's talk about this, like, particular, like, conversation. And then there's always that person in the group that kind of tries to, like, add on to it and kind of, again, suppresses, like, what that other person said.
Yeah.
And they're typically, like, on the same side, right? And they think that having those arguments with each other is actually benefiting people of color or queer folks or, like, folks with disabilities, right? So they think that these conversations they're having are... changing things. And I think that they can if they're effective, mm-hmm. but a lot of the times they're reactionary.
Yeah.
And I will throw myself under the bus. I'm a very reactionary person. Like if something pisses me off, I'm the first one to get up and be like, what did you say?
Yeah.
So it's not easy to just like dismiss that, but like we need to be aware of it. And then again, in turn, like, how do we have these conversations without making people feel attacked? Mm-hmm. Because people don't want to be in a conversation where they're, you know, they're being like challenged. And I keep, you know, that I don't remember the quote, but essentially it talks about how like we can critique the things that we love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to challenge those things.
Yeah. I remember that. That's something that I always like think about in terms of when certain things like, I'm just going to say like reggaeton, you know, is sometimes really problematic. And a lot of like the music in like the Mexican, like the regional Mexican genre. but I still like it because there's some that are like, okay, like these are okay, or like I like to
dance. Can you give an example?
But I can think of a group. What is it? I think it's Calibre 50. And so they do a lot of like, they're called corridos. I wouldn't know what to translate that.
Homegrown, me either.
Okay. That a lot of them is like, one of them is like, oh gosh, I had it right here. Talking about him like being really like into other women and how he can cheat on her like whenever, and you know, just like very like sexist and machistas kind of way. But like other songs that they have are like really nice and you can like dedicate it to like, you know, the person you like and or love and whatever. But it's still like realizing the damage that they're doing in the other few songs that they have that are very
problematic
and like paint women to be like manipulative and that just want your money, or that they should like be this certain way, you know.
Usually, yeah.
There's a phrase that, like alta y delgadita, like, you know, tall and skinny, where like I've heard like a lot of like Mexican folks say that, you know, that they would rather have somebody who's like tall and skinny and like, you know, blonde or with their colorful eyes or whatever.
And I think how we can tie that to liberal elitism is that, you know, the intention behind it, because they think that they have all these other songs that make them all like, you know, I don't know, like it makes it excuses the other like nonsense. And it also just kind of shows how important language is amongst all of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to look again. We've said this so many times, but looking past good intentions, looking past intentions and being more critical of how we present things and how we say things and how and what this means in relative to us in the world. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to say about liberal elitism before we move on to the next one?
I think also, especially thinking about it in the ways that it affects like the social services, right? Because let's say I was to give, I'm like a rich, you know, Latina or whatever, and I decide to give this organization like so much amount in a grant or whatever. A lot of what grants or like scholarships and things, they always kind of ask for something in return. And those can be like really specific things. And I think that doesn't leave room for the organizations to like really put that money to use in a way that they need it. I was at a workshop one time and the woman was saying how they had these like Mixteco women who were trying to learn English and like Spanish too. But because the grant was more towards so like for children and like their early childhood education, like they couldn't put that under like, you know, we're going to help these women or assist them. So they had to be creative in the ways that they would change the language to be able to get school supplies and like the different resources they needed for the women to learn English.
And that is where the elitism comes, right? The manipulation and control of how those resources are used. That one. And I think that, you know, we're gonna talk a little bit later about how like to deconstruct these things, and again, when we list them, they're not easy, and by no means are they like the only ones. So if you have anything to add to it, email us about it.
Yeah.
The next one is people of color elitism. And this one was, okay, this one was interesting for us because we came across a video talking specifically about black elitism.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, how about let's expand it and talk about people of color in general.
Yeah.
Not because we want to dismiss, you know, black folks or anything, but because
we can't talk from that experience.
Exactly. You
know, we're not black women, so.
Yeah. And so, like, with... This one was fascinating for me because I also haven't really thought about it, even though I think it's really, it happens all the time. And it's completely tied to class. And we can see that because there's a lot of, you know, people of color that have made it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is from generational wealth. You know, it like money is powerful and money grows the longer you have it, right? Mm-hmm. Like for the longest time when only white folks could own land and, you know, black folks couldn't, that gave white people generational power mm-hmm. and generational wealth and has put them well ahead of black folks and people of color. So when when people are given resources to be more successful than others, they have more control. Mm-hmm. They have more say in how society works. So one of the things, again, was generational wealth and how that contributes to just like getting more and more rich. And I think that really goes straight into like how it separates you from your community, right? If you're a wealthy person of color, you're separated from your community because the majority of your community is not.
Mm-hmm. And with the video that we saw, so it was this person who, she had won like a scholarship or something, right? And she was invited to like this like hella fancy dinner. And she was just explaining how she always knew there was that elite like black class, right? But for her, it was so weird to be like out of in that space, because I think they were just making that like separation between like the community and how she felt it that they kind of like pulled the ladder like after themselves, so that they weren't really trying to build within the community and help other people achieve as much as they had.
And I think also when you're separated from your community, you start to forget mm-hmm. like the disadvantages that your community has.
Yeah,
you start not being a part of creating that change because you made it mm-hmm. to the top, right? The other thing that was mentioned that we think is important is like the transgression from poor to being rich, because when you grew up poor, you were low income, etc., and were able to, you know, someday like get this successful career, make a bunch of money, mm-hmm. whatever that is, you can't, like, once you're at that point, like, I mean, I don't know because I've never experienced it, but I'm just like, yeah. but I assume and have observed that you clearly would never go back to being poor, right? Mm-hmm. You're like switching this, you're kind of switching this kind of identity that you've carried for a long time. And kind of the way that you like justify it is that like, well, I worked hard for it, right? Mm-hmm. So again, I think it's a learning curve. Like you have to like process what it means to have been from this group of people to another. Mm-hmm. And we always like classify ourselves, right? Like we always have this need to want to belong to something and something bigger and something that has like, again, that influence and power and control. So I mean, again, can't imagine what it's like to go from poor to rich, but like that, you know, I think that it comes with a lot of reflection that people don't normally like do, mm-hmm. maybe because they don't have the space to have that conversation with other people.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it's a little like brainwashing too.
Mm-hmm. I definitely, because I feel like then, like, now your new group is like, okay, well, look at you. You made it, like, you know, and they make you forget, like, the struggle it took you to do all of that. Because now they're like, okay, now you can have all these luxuries and just really, I feel like, blind you with that.
Yeah, and it's just, like, interesting how, I mean, I just think it's fascinating how there's these like rite of passages, right, that society puts in place that you need to achieve. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is like self-actualization, like having that opportunity to have your dream job and be successful at it and make a lot of money. It's tied to this American dream, mm-hmm. this American dream that everybody aspires to be, even though it doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also very imposing to like, it's just imposing to who we are.
Yeah.
And I think it's this like fake narrative that everyone's striving for or trying to understand or grasp. And like, if you were to ask other people probably in other countries, how they envision America, they would say something along, you know, the American dream. Mm-hmm. It's very typical to hear that.
Yeah. And then with that, I think it's the concept of like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And again, that's where, that whole thing of the notion is that if you made it, you know, so can everybody else. And so I feel like then that's why they're like, okay, so they have to work harder for it. And it, again, all the systemic barriers are ignored.
And it also, again, goes back into like that separation of your family, mm-hmm. or not family, sorry, your community. Because you're like, if I did it, everybody else can. Yeah. And it comes with this kind of fetishization of like, oh, I've made it to the top. I'm deserving of this. I know everybody else would be capable of this. Like, you always hear people say, if I can do it, you can. Mm-hmm. And that's like really annoying because not everybody has the same experience or mm-hmm. resources or mentors
yeah.
to get to that point. Mm-hmm. The other thing we were mentioning with that is like, I guess we can talk a little bit about the, I guess, dreamer narrative within that fetishization is that it's like trendy mm-hmm. to be someone that struggled and made it, right?
Yeah.
So along with like fetishization, you get like these opportunities to go and speak at this mm-hmm. dinner or be a part of this event, and you start monetizing your knowledge. You start monetizing the work that you've done to get to where you are. And I think that doesn't necessarily have to be money. It could also be like awards. You're being recognized. Mm-hmm. And now you are, I don't know, it's just, again, trying to separate people. It's like, yeah. I'm better than you mm-hmm. For this reason.
Yeah. And it makes you like a, what were we saying earlier? A poster child, right? For like, this is how everybody should be.
Yeah, exactly. And they tell you things like, oh, you're so eloquent. You're so well spoken. Mm-hmm. You speak English well. Like things like that, mm-hmm. that are really backhanded comments to the rest of our community because it yeah. leaves them behind. Mm-hmm. And then when you're monetizing all these things that you're doing and not putting it back into your community, you're not helping others get to the top. And that moves us on to the other part of like
constructively building for others to also like move forward.
So something that someone said once, like, how are you mentoring other people to get to where you are? And again, it's easy to lose sight track of that because you are so busy investing in your family, your job, your education, your business, mm-hmm. your other, you know, personal and social problems that are happening in your life too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of distractions from it.
Yeah. I know personally, like, as like the new year is kind of coming up for me and stuff, and reflecting on what I asked like last year, in terms of like when we were in ceremony and stuff, and I really just realized that it came to me again, the question of like, what and for who did I go to school for, right? Because in the job that I am now, I feel that I'm not really putting it like the work back, and kind of like made me realize that that's not the healthy like that's not the environment that I really want to be in anymore. And so I really want to go back to where I am like helping and serving my community.
And along with, you know, higher education, that's the next topic we're going to cover mm-hmm. is how does higher education create, again, this elitism that somebody made it to the top because they navigated the system. One of the things that I will never forget was Michael Dumas came to Western Washington University and gave a talk on just like education. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was called Not Giving a Damn, something like that. But he talked a lot about how education kind of paints this picture that you are now somebody once you get your degree, that you are a deserving citizen because you know, they like say these things over and over to you mm-hmm. to the point where you believe them, that you believe that you're better than other people. And that's elitism. That gives when people feel that they have power and control of, mm-hmm. like they're gonna use it. And actually, I kind of want to point out something really funny that happened this weekend with the Dream Fellows. Someone, we were going over, like, I think it's the 48 laws of power. That number could be totally wrong. But one of the girls was like, I don't really see myself doing this. I just tell people what to do and it happens. And then everybody started cracking up because that's power. So it's really funny when, you know, things like that come across. And I think that, we're at, like, fault for that, too, I'm sure, various times in our mm-hmm. lives within liberal elitism, within higher education, within various things. What else do you want to talk about higher education?
I think with that, something that we stress a lot is the validity, or, you know, how, like, because of that, the knowledge that we got from that space, now we're seen as, like, okay, somebody who has the credibility to talk about so-and-so. And that totally, like, ignores all the, like, personal and maybe, like, traditional knowledge that is usually, like, passed down. Because there's different types of knowledge and education and everything. And I think that not just an education that was achieved through, like, higher education should be
the most valued. Mm-hmm. And again, what kind of education is it? For what mm-hmm. and for whom?
Yeah.
Because for the longest time, you know, women, people of color could not mm-hmm. attend these institutions. Yeah. So from the beginning, they weren't created for them. And now that they're entering these spaces in masses, like, usually the university or institution cannot cater to them as well as they should because they weren't prepared for that kind of population.
Yeah. Or in terms of, like, what education was also given, like, I'm thinking of, like, the native boarding schools, you know, that was a totally different type of education than the one that, like, maybe the white males were receiving, you know, because they were being taught to, like, obey and to be... what was it, going from like the savage, you know, to to a classy kind of man.
And that brings us to the point of, like, again, who is this education for? Like, who is it for and who does it benefit? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how higher education creates this elitism because there's people deciding what we learn in every space we're in. From not just mm-hmm. higher education, but throughout elementary school, throughout middle school. Mm-hmm. Like, those things were decided by a group of people with power and influence that are now, like, making, you know, this, like, wave of knowledge that we are right. We know what you deserve to learn. These are the bases. Mm-hmm. This is how you're going to survive off of them.
Yeah.
I came across this article that I don't have the, like, quote word for word, but essentially it's saying we're trying to make higher education, quote unquote, more accessible while making it more expensive. So only the people of color that want to go heavily into debt mm-hmm. can be a part of this while we're trying to recruit more people of color. Right. So, like, it's just, again, complicated because an education should be accessible to everybody, but also people think of themselves as better once they have it. Mm-hmm. And something that you hear a lot is, like, in, you know, again, a fucking meme or whatever, but, like, it was talking about how, like, I didn't have to go into higher education to be woke, mm-hmm. which I have issues with the word woke, and we're going to talk about that later. But, like, again, when you go into higher ed, you think you know it all. Mm-hmm. You have this, like, kind of this, like, snooty kind of thing of, like, I know more because I went through this experience. Mm-hmm. And then in turn, you were saying that sometimes people perceive that even without you necessarily showing that.
Yeah. Yeah. In my, like, own personal experience, after, like, I went over here to Western and then I went kind of back home, like, I felt like a lot more people, like, saw me, like, differently or thought that yo era una creída, that, you know, that I thought myself to be, like, more better than than the people from my like hometown community, which in reality, like, I don't know why they would think that when I'm like, don't really like flaunt it, or, you know, I'm like really, I consider myself to be kind of like humble and not really trying to, you know, do that or like very show offy. But that perception was put on me. And so it's always really weird to.
But that perception isn't wrong, you know, based on what society has told people.
Yeah.
There's a reason they think those things. And it's not because of you. It's because of the larger message that is being distributed that you are deserving once you get into higher education.
Yeah.
And not only get through higher education, but successfully survive through higher education, which is like really difficult, especially for people of color. So along with that, like when you're talking about the rate of return of higher education and how people that have access to it have more opportunities, you know, like when you apply to a job, a lot of like, you know, the more like white collar jobs require a master's degree, require this and that, when realistically a lot of those things could be learned on the way. A lot of those things could be learned throughout experience. Like, you don't have to go through higher education and get a business, like a, you know, a business degree and start a business, because we, you know, a lot of a lot of businesses were not built off that education. So there's a rate of return on how we even perceive our worth after higher ed and the opportunities that are brought to us. And that, you know, when we talk about, again, the fetishization, like we fetishize people that have made it. We fetishize those that are deserving of this and that. And again, I bring this up because I challenge this narrative a lot. But like the dreamer narrative of, you know, all these deserving model citizens are in higher education, contributing to like our economy. Like, why? Like, again, it has to be that they're deserving in order to, like, be here.
Deserving or contributing something back to, again, that, that benefits the overall, like, system, right?
And I guess that'll tie us into the next one, which is citizenship elitism. It was difficult when we were talking about citizenship elitism because we immediately detracted to thinking about, like, the things that we didn't have. Because, again, we don't have that experience of having that, like, safety net or whatever. So our immediate thought was, like, oh, these are all the things that we don't have access to. Instead of thinking of, like, these people have access to this because of this. So just work with us through all of that. And I think something to mention here is that we don't think citizenship is the solution. And I don't think we ever have. And I think that it's a larger conversation, which is why we always ask people, like, what do you envision your liberation to look like? Some people see that as citizenship. Other people don't. And again, why does this construct exist? Why is it imposed on us? Why is that someone was born somewhere, they are more deserving? Again, that geographical elitism within that as well. And there's, like, you know, things that we thought about were, like, the ability to just move freely. Like, how simple is that? To freely be able to move, yet has so much, it carries a lot, right? Because we are not allowed to leave the country. I mean, we are, but then we just can't come back. Whereas people can freely do that and they don't even think twice about it.
I know.
To add on to that conversation is, like, citizenship privilege, citizenship elitism comes with access to services, access to healthcare, access to financial aid for higher education, access to food stamps, you know, various services that we don't qualify for. And also it's funny because we don't qualify for them, but then people still think that we're taking all those resources. When we don't even have access to them. And if they have access to them, it's never enough. It's never enough money. It's never enough whatever, you know. And I think we need to think more about how access to resources gives us a privilege that other people don't have and potentially might never have.
And then those different, like, services can really make a difference in terms of things, like you said, like, we don't have access to, like, financial aid or, like, health and stuff. And personally, like, the access or non-access to like health makes such a difference. Like I can imagine the different like health problems, you know, a lot of the folks in our community have, but because they don't have insurance or can't access that, like they won't take care of themselves and hopefully not, but ultimately will lead to death, right? Or to different causes.
One of the things that I think about is Georgia won't even allow people that don't have citizenship mm-hmm. to, or some kind of like legal residency to attend higher education.
Yeah.
So that's creating a barrier for people to not succeed. Mm-hmm. And then there's like different like policies again that don't allow us to succeed
mm-hmm.
because of, you know, whether it's like language or whether it's a bullet point that makes all the difference in what we can apply to. And one of the things I think about is scholarships
mm.
where if it says like you need to be a citizen or resident, a DACA person yeah. or whatever, like it again, like that tiny little bullet creates a barrier for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obstacle.
And then with citizenship comes also the privilege of being able to vote. And I think we felt that definitely really hard with the 2016 elections when we were like feeling frustrated and just really powerless, you know, in a decision that was going to be made that was going to affect us.
Not just like with policies and money, but mm-hmm. also like our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, that separation of that we're deserving more because we went into higher education or because we're dreamers, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have, and it's not just like federal mm-hmm. or even state, it's like local politics, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not yeah. even able to engage in that kind of conversation when it all clearly like affects us.
Yeah. And very few folks will go into the community and really ask like what they want, what they need, and work with the community to make sure that the laws or the changes that are going to be implemented work for the community rather than against.
And that kind of makes me think of, again, that fetishization
mm-hmm.
of like saying that you are for immigrants, that you are for helping these children
mm-hmm.
and not acknowledging how some of the language that you're using is divisive and dehumanizing.
Yeah.
And some of the practices maybe that you contribute to are exploiting other people. Like you don't stop to kind of analyze those things because sometimes they're not in our face. Mm-hmm. And with like when you, I mean, I think there's more than 11 million undocumented people here. And again, I don't like to put numbers on these things because I think numbers are dehumanizing. But when that many people are affected and have like
no say
when it comes to that kind of system of voting,
mm-hmm.
there's a huge amount of people that are being left out. So I think you're right. 2016 election was a huge indicator of how that affected our lives and has continued to affect our lives, because ever since that happened, there's been this constant discussion about the wall and DACA folks and mm-hmm. this and that. And again, it's that deserving narrative.
Yeah, very much so. Especially again, like with the new thing that's happening, you know, like let's leave dreamers in and or like TPS people, you know,
and then invest billions on
uh-huh.
enforcing our borders and militarizing our borders yeah. And dehumanizing people. Right. Because when when you're investing so much money into that, there's also research. There's also more camps, there's more detention
yep.
because you're investing more money into it
mm-hmm.
and you're making money off of these bodies. So it's monetizing the power and control of what it is to be a citizen.
So with that also comes the opportunities or the different types of occupations that you can hold, right, with citizenship. I think one example that I think about is teachers, right? Because that's like a federal job. And so that a social security or some type of like work permit or something is needed to be an educator.
Also to like work in any kind of federal mm-hmm. politics, you need to have some kind of legal status beyond this temporary protected status, right?
Yeah.
So having more access to those occupations and opportunities mm-hmm. makes you forget and separates you from your community again. And again, you have like, you don't stop to think about the people that don't have this because you've never had to think about not having it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is constantly in the news over and over again is this like fear of immigrants, this fear of people that don't have citizenship when citizenship is literally just a fucking piece of paper.
Yep.
If that. And so, like, I just yelled so loud. so, like, with when you use these fear tactics and you're saying, like, all these people that don't have this piece of paper are not worthy of mm-hmm. being here, mm-hmm. are not, you know, it puts us in a box of, again, constantly being dehumanized and exploited. And then when you meet people that, like, you do think are deserving of getting citizenship because they lived here their whole lives, mm-hmm. like what barriers are there for us to not be able to get that paper, right? Mm-hmm. And like we've mentioned, like, we don't think citizenship is the solution, but it's definitely something that affects us every single day.
Yeah.
And in various ways, because we're here just talking about our experiences as undocumented people. But then there's temporary protected status. Mm-hmm. Then there's, you know, other layers to that, like API folks that are undocumented. They have a different struggle, a different story, a different reason why they migrated. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, a lot of the time they are intersectional, but they come with different experiences.
Yeah. I'm also thinking about the limited type of citizenships, like the folks from Samoa who, you know, have that quote unquote citizenship, but then aren't allowed to vote for president.
What? And that kind of goes back to that geographical stuff we were mm-hmm. talking about.
Yeah, it's all...
It's somehow intertwined. And that's mm-hmm. why we were having such a hard time, like, narrowing this topics down.
Yeah.
And we're going to move on to the last one. And this one is, I think, more powerful than we want to admit. And it is social platforms. Like, when you are an elite person, you have various social platforms in which you can influence other people because you have a larger following. Mm-hmm. When you have access to influencing a large group of people, that is power, right? That is having some, that's like, again, you get this from this credibility, this kind of like work that you've done and I don't like that. You get it from this kind of like credibility that people should listen to you because you are this successful actor or mm-hmm. actress or
musician,
whatever. And a politician, mm-hmm. You see this a lot in politics where a lot of like, you know, women of color are being like, again, fetishized and tokenized. And yes, they might be for the people, about the people, a part mm-hmm. of the community, but they're still a part of U.S. imperialism.
Yeah.
They're still a part of the system, and people will argue like you have to be a part of the system to break it down, to change it. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that 100%. But I also recognize that that's not always the way, right? Because those systems, again, were not created for us. Mm-hmm. Something I was telling Olga, that one of my mentors said this last weekend. He, in no way am I going to give it justice to the way he was saying, but essentially what he was saying was that he was having a conversation with one of his more conservative friends, and he had told them that, we passed this really cool opportunity for more women of color to get engaged in this thing, whatever. And then the conservative friend responded with, "That's cute, because while you're doing that, I'm making sure that this money is allocated to this and that." Mm-hmm. So when we're trying to play catch up, they're still building and building and building and leaving us behind. Mm-hmm. So we're not able to catch up to them because of already the influence, the generational wealth, the race, you know, those things that are that were in place and have affected us mm-hmm. throughout probably like, I don't know, like existence. And like the social platforms allow you to have access to everybody. So one of the conversations that we had this weekend was kind of how, like, you know, high up people have a lot of influence on not just politics, but the way people think, the conversations people are having, even what people wear, where they eat, mm-hmm. I guess the list could go on and on, but like one of the things that pops into my head is just like recently Cardi B's coming out and saying all these like, you know, like, why is the government shut down? This and that. And this is how I, you know, this is what's happening. And then people are following, like they're resharing that information. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that people have to hear it from those high influencing people instead of like directly trying to find how they could, you know, like how mm-hmm. they can personally learn from it and yeah. how they could be a, like, again, walking up that ladder while helping others walk up that ladder. But I don't know. It's just interesting. Like, we put so much trust and credibility into the people that have money and power already.
Yeah.
And a conversation we had this weekend was around Beyonce, like, supporting Beto in Texas. And it was the day before the election that she wore the Beto hat. And if she had done, again, that's timing, right? If she yeah. had done that, like, earlier on or whatever, like, that would have had influence. And there was people saying in the room, like, oh, I don't think that would have had influence. I don't think that would have switched, you know, the voting, et cetera. Uh-huh. But, like, people listen to these people.
Yeah.
Because of
the power, the money, the privilege that they kind of hold, right, with their social media platforms.
And we keep, like, repeating this over and over again, but it's like, it's important to realize that all of them, there's a root to the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And those seem to be the reoccurring things that constantly come up. And again, one of them is access to resources.
I think with the social platform, we have to remember that we made those people, or like kind of like who they are, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
Because we gave them that, like, that support and that privilege to become famous, to become rich. Because if we hadn't listened to them, if we hadn't liked their music or their acting or their whatever, they wouldn't be where they are. So we, as their, like, quote, fans, I guess would be
followers,
you know, whatever you want to call them, if we wouldn't continue to uphold them, then they wouldn't have that power. I'm thinking of an example, and I forgot from if it was either from Puerto Rico or what, like, Latinx community, but there was two artists who, like, had been able to set up a meeting with, like, a mayor to talk about the violence against women. And then this organization had been trying for, like, years and months to do so. But because, again, they held that, like, social platform, and because they were well-known and stuff, they were able to get that meeting way before than the organization mm-hmm. who had been fighting for the women's rights for so long.
And another example of it is, like, Trump, right? Like, regardless if we're talking good or bad or critiquing or... So it's kind of like you're saying, we're giving them and giving them and giving them that power and giving them that access mm-hmm. To essentially, like, influence how we think, how we go about our lives, what we believe in. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can't even picture, like, life without social media anymore. Because, again, people only put their best selves on there. There's not, you have to have this, like, cookie cutter Instagram or cookie cutter, like, Twitter that has mm-hmm. to justify, like, why you're right and everybody else is wrong. Mm-hmm.
There has been, like, positive and negative aspects to being able to, like, connect and share with people, like, all around the world, because I think that's something that social media has really done. Like, now I can have, like, a friend all the way, like, half across the, you know, the globe, and we can share ideas and really see, like, what's going on. And again, that can be for, like, good or bad use, but really remembering, I guess, what the whole purpose of all of it is.
Mm-hmm. And for what and for whom. Mm-hmm. So how do we, like, deconstruct all of these elitist, like, things we've been talking about? Because a lot of the people that might not consider themselves elite mm-hmm. are because of... regardless of what it is, whether being they're a man, they're heterosexual, they're cis body, various things, including just everything we've gone over, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, how do we deconstruct it? But again, we don't know the full-on answer to that. We don't mm-hmm. know. And again, there's probably a lot more to it than what we're about to share.
Yeah.
But some of those things include.
Yeah. I think the first thing that we always have to realize is becoming aware of our own biases, and really remembering kind of like, why do I think this way, or what led me to think this way, or kind of like, why is my idea or my thinking shaped in this way? And really like reflecting on that.
And before like reflecting on it, like admitting your biases, right? Admitting that, that this is happening in your line of thinking, and then reflecting and deconstructing it yourself, because it's going to be different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's on their own journey trying to distinguish what means what to them and how they're a part of it. But I think there has to be another piece to it. And that piece is like, how are you contributing back to those mm-hmm. communities? How are you contributing to not just the communities you came from, but other ones, without imposing your, you know, your views or your ideologies, your, you know, experiences, and without like fetishizing and tokenizing, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we kind of covered this a little bit with talking about like people of color elitism, tying it to class, that, you know, how are you not just dragging the, like, stop dragging the ladder and create opportunities for other people to succeed, and, you know, start contributing back to whatever community based on what you have learned, right? And one of the things that I think is very important is like, you always take people to the top with you. You can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
It took a whole community to raise you. It's gonna, you know, you have to contribute back to that community.
Yeah.
Because there's so many other people coming after you that deserve everything that you have and more. So how do we start helping people and mentoring people to get to where we are?
Yeah. And like we said, we don't, like, these are just a couple of the things that we thought of. And that I feel like just like healing looks different for everybody. And we all may like based on our own like cultures, our traditions, our ways, that could look differently as well. But still just always remembering, kind of like where you're at and where you're trying to get to, but taking others with you.
And I feel like we could go in more depth with these things, but there are already a lot of things to deconstruct and think about in themselves. And we decided on these five topics because when we were looking this stuff up and trying to do research, there's not a lot of research on it.
Yeah, it was really hard.
It was really hard. It was really limited. And we don't open up space to have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, challenge yourself. Reflect on who you are in the midst of this like society that strives to be elite, that strives to be at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's this individualistic narrative of I'm deserving. I deserve this in order because I experienced this, and we're forgetting our whole community.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you agree with what we're saying, whether you disagree, whether, you know, you have things to add to the conversation, like, we want to hear those things. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is open for discussion. That's open for critique. But, you know, whatever you decide to believe, whatever you decide to support or contribute, you know, that's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to close it off like that. But before we do that, I think we wanted to give a shout out to the people who have supported us in getting through a lot of these systems.
Mm-hmm. Our badass maestras, our mentors, the people that we've, like, learned to love and, you know, really care for now.
The people that share knowledge with us, mm-hmm. the people that support us, you know, through, whether it's emotionally, whether it's by being there physically, mm-hmm. whether it's financially, whatever that is. Like, I think, you know, making room to say that it takes a community, right? Mm-hmm. To get through and navigate everything we're experiencing.
Yeah. And we're so grateful for that. And we hope to continue and to do the same for the future generations and for everybody who's kind of like growing alongside us.
Exactly. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at ashotoftruthpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us a nice tweet at @ShotOfTruthPodcast or look on Instagram for behind-the-scenes photos @ShotOfTruthPodcast. You can also find us on Patreon and donate to our podcast at Shot of Truth Podcast. You can just assume it's all Shot of Truth Podcast. Podcast, podcast, podcast. A Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast.
This has been a Student Science production.